Thank you, Brother Heath. To my knowledge, there's only been one other time that the time of this service, this church began. To my knowledge, there has only been one time. It's my pleasure to talk to you just a little while, a couple of hours or so, about this church. There's been a lot of water under the bridge since this church started. A lot of things have happened. A lot of great things have happened. That's what we need to think about and have our minds on, is the great things that happened about this church. I can look out over the audience now. I can see a lot of people that were not here. I can look out over the audience and see lots of you that I remember when you were just this way, real small. The group that started this church lived east of Dayton. 78% lived in this community. In September 1957, we began to make plans, the men of this congregation, and the women was involved in this, to start a new congregation. We talked to the elders at Haines Street, where we all were at that time, about our intentions of what we were going to do. They were gracious to talk to us about it and instruct us on some things that we need to do. That when we started the congregation, we were on our own. They had nothing to do with us, except maybe some advice once in a while if we needed it. But they were not over us when we started this church. Many times, though, we would ask them for advice on different things that was happening. They were very gracious to us and to talk to us. Brother Roger Lawson, Sister Carolyn Ricks, I got that back a little bit, let me tell you. Brother Roger Ricks and Sister Carolyn Lawson's father was one of the elders at Haines Street. One of the finest men, except some of you who are here, that I know of. Very few Saturdays that LaVon and I spent by ourselves. He was at my house, and we were going over things that need to be done. But anyway, we talked to them about that. We were having two services at Haines Street at that time, getting overrun by people, and it was great. The two services that we had to be, something had to be done. And that's the reason we started talking to them about coming. At that time, there was five congregations from the Haines Street that started. We based our scripture, our intentions on two scriptures. 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. And in Philippians 3:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. That should be, I think, our intentions today. It has been a pleasure for me. I'm not over this church. Never was, because I'm one of the first ones that came here. There's nothing that I had over anybody else, women or men. We had some of the best people that we could talk to out of the group that I'm talking about. But when we came here, our intention was to find and build a place that we could worship. We were always on the lookout for a place that we could own and build a place to worship. At that time, the congregation or a church could not borrow money from a bank. We could not do that. I don't know if that's changed or not, but we were not allowed to borrow any money from there. On October the 6th, 1957, we met for the first time in the Shaw School over on Kemp Road to worship. And we talked and talked, and we were looking every day for somewhere where we could have to worship besides that school. There was an old building down on 35 East. You can see that as you leave here going to Dayton. Look on the right, it's a big white building. At that time, it wasn't. It was an old brick building, very bad looking. It came up for sale. We jumped on that right then. No money. So they gave us a price on the building, but at that time I told you we could not borrow money that from the bank. A brother and sister in the church, after we had a meeting, came to us that night and said, "We're buying that church, that old church building." That was brother and sister Eddie Quinn, who many of us know. We bought that church building. There was furniture of everything in there. Two pianos and two organs. Much furniture. Living room furniture. Dining room furniture, of which we had to get rid of. We begged and tried to get people, and maybe some of them have it that we gave to that you maybe know. There's four of us that I know of that's here, that meet here regularly, that are part of that church. Brother John Sellers, Karen Blackaby, Jerry Cogshale, and myself. That's the only people that I know of that were here to begin with. But that was one of the best times of my life, is working with people and starting that congregation. There was more doings with men and women. The women met just the same as the men did. They would call the men, us men, "What can we do tomorrow? What is our job tomorrow?" The old building was papered inside. All that had to be taken off. The basement was a mess. We dug a baptistry in the basement because we were having lots of people obeying the gospel at that time. And we were having to go to Haines Street or one of the other. It was Haines Street all the time that we went to baptize. But we dug that dug a hole in the basement and fixed us a baptistry. We decided that we need to put the fourth Sunday's contribution in the bank for a new building. Look out for our plans that what we were going to do. Put that fourth Sunday, and we started doing that. By the time we got this building here, we could pay for it. But there's lots of things that go in. Don't start a congregation unless you know what you're going to do. Have plans. Have it all set up that you know what you can do and what you can't do. Some of the best people that I know of, we worked with. Both men and women, as I've already stated that. The women would work day and night. The men would work from their jobs on the factory or wherever they worked. They would stop and work there on their way home. Work till midnight. Very long hours. But it was pleasure. We decided that we needed a place. We were growing so fast that we needed a place bigger than that and of our own. I'm telling you what the church can do. I knew the realtor here in Dayton. Maybe some of you know him. Mr. Poleska. I stopped personally. Not that I was over everything, but they asked me if I would stop and see him. I stopped one day and talked to him. He said, "I'll know tomorrow." Every day I stopped at his office. He said, "I'll know tomorrow what we can do." I stopped the next day and he brought this place right where we are now. You would have said, if you would have seen the place, "What in the world do we want with that thing?" Where we are sitting, there was a hole here that if I stood in that, you've got the rope, you couldn't see me. We bought the building. We sold bonds and bought this place for to build a church building and a house for the preacher over there. The members of the church bought 75% of the bonds. Every so often, I think every 6 months, there would be interest on the bonds that we sold. And there was a ticket in your bonds that you bought it that you could either take that ticket to the bank and cash it and get your money back, or you could either do what you wanted to with it. Every person that I know of, and I don't know everybody, but every person that I know of, that ticket was in the contribution on Sunday morning of the interest that their money drawed. You talk about happy moments. They even needed just as bad as I did. I knew that. Lots of them did. But we worked together. 2 acres and 9/10 is the property on this building. We gave $12,000 for it. Before we even made the deed or anything, we would offer $6,000 profit. The last account that I know, this place here was $750,000. I know. Maybe you know different to that. But I know we talked to different realtors, talked to different loan companies, and that's exactly what they offered us at that time. But we kept it, started building on it. Brother Pugh was his name, from the Kettering congregation, was the realtor at that time. And he not a realtor, builder, contractor, and he took the contract to build this building and charged us very little above his the property that we bought, very little above what the material cost him. He did us a favor, very good favor. And we had members here that were doing, Brother Joe Gentry was a contractor, and he helped a lot, didn't charge anything. The only thing that we did, as men of this congregation, you can look at the ceiling, and we helped them put that stuff on there. Men took off from work. Every person had to buy a hammer. It was a different kind of hammer that we drove those big nails in there. But we did it with a lot of prayer and a lot of work. Don't regret a minute of it. I'm tickled to death that I can stand here and look out over the audience and see you, many of your faces. Some I wish I could see. But the women of the congregation worked. Nobody wanted that old furniture that was in there. We had to give it away to anybody that would want it. And sometimes we hauled it in a trailer to their place. There might be one or two. Brother Jerry might have some of them. I don't know. But anyhow, I won't take a lot of your time, but that's exactly the life of this congregation. It took working together. Lots of members started coming from other places at that time. Two good men that I know of that I can talk to you about was Brother Jim Blackaby, Brother Hayden Hastings. And we chose them to be elders with myself in 1969. And from that moment, we was a congregation of our own. Didn't have to ask anybody for anything other than just prayers. And we got those, I'm sure. But I'm very happy to stand and announce to you and talk to you about it. It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. We made another decision that I didn't talk about. Is that when we got a preacher to hold a meeting, we got the best men that we could find. Nothing else. Nothing else but the best. And when the first man that we got, well, we had some younger fellows that preached around once in a while. Brother Earl Robertson was available. We got him. Some of you know. But he was instrumental in this building being put up, instrumental in appointing elders, and talked to us much about. We thanked him so much for that. So that is the life or the beginning of this church. To my knowledge right now, it is one of the best congregations that I know of. If you know of a better one, let us know. We'll go. Let us know if there's a better one. And that's not bragging, not saying we're better than anybody else. It don't mean that at all. Other congregation in the area. We are one of the five congregations that is still here. Some are gone. Very few of them are still here. Thank you so much for listening to me. I wish that I could look out over the audience and see more people that were here then. But as I said, I can see a lot of you younger ones that I remember when they brought you home from the hospital. I'm 39 years old and growing. But with some of the best people that I know, we worked together. It wasn't easy. I'm not saying that was easy what we did. No way. It was hard. A lot of nights losing sleep. A lot of times I could reach in my pocketbook, and I'm sure the others did too. But that dollar wasn't there. We spent it for something else at the church. Today, I think this congregation is one of the best congregations that I know of. And we are great, with 5 good elders and a preacher with Brother Rogers and his family. Let's all work together. I'd like to just leave you with something before I sit down. You'll say, good for you. Sit down. When I was a little boy, that's a couple of years ago, there was a song that we'd sing. The name of the song was, Don't Weaken the Wheel. Maybe some of you have heard it. It was beautiful. And this is the way it went. The course of the song went, don't weaken the wheel. Each spoke Jesus needs. When one fails to hold, some burden heart bleeds. Grow stronger in faith each time that you kneel. Keep working for God, but don't weaken the wheel. Brother Heath.
Talking with Harold since we moved here and gotten bits and pieces of that, and glad to hear that all laid out in that way. I want to talk for a few moments, just a few, on the importance of us remembering. Why would the elders allow this? Why would they allow one of our members to get up and talk about the things that happened here? We're not looking in the Bible. Why is that important? It is important. It is important for us to remember where we came from, not just in looking back at the scriptures, but even looking in our current time. Just a few generations ago, what's the saying, those who don't remember history are doomed to repeat it? We need to know our history. You know, one thing we learn as we read the scriptures is that God knows us, and God knows something about us, and that is that we're prone to forget. We are prone to forgetfulness. And as Moses was bringing the people into the promised land, in the book of Deuteronomy, that's a speech that he was giving to them, preparing that generation to go in and to inherit that land, that promise that was made to their father, Abraham. And I found an interesting phrase that was repeated 3 times very close together in the book of Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy chapter 4 and in verse 9, Moses says, only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. That first admonition there is to take heed to yourself. Keep these things in the forefront of your mind. Don't forget them. Don't forget the things that you have seen, because they're important, they're significant, they're part of what made you who you are, and they're part of what will make you my people as you go in to inherit the land. But notice also the second admonition that's found in this verse. Teach them to your children and your grandchildren. Isn't that some of what's been done this morning? Talking about the things that were seen and done, and sharing that with the generations that came afterwards. Lest we forget the things that we have seen. Just a few verses later, take heed to yourselves, lest you forget the covenant of the Lord your God, which He made with you. And make for yourself a carved image in the form of anything which the Lord your God has forbidden you. For the Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God. So take heed to yourself, lest you forget your covenant. Everything that you're going to enjoy in this land is based upon you keeping that covenant, and don't forget it. You take care to make sure that you do not forget. And then a couple of chapters later, so it shall be when the Lord your God brings you into the land of which he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you large and beautiful cities in which you did not build. And it goes on to talk about houses you didn't build and vineyards that you didn't plant. You're going to have all this. And when you have it all, you're going to be tempted to forget. So don't. Then beware lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. Look at what they could forget. They could forget what they saw. They could forget the agreement that they made with God, and they could forget God himself altogether. God knows that his people are prone to forgetfulness. So all along the way, God established memorials for his people. Back in Genesis chapter 9, there's the rainbow, which is a memorial, a reminder that God has made a promise he will never again destroy the earth with water. And you know, in that text, God is the one who says, when I see the rainbow, I will remember. I will remember the promise that I made. In Exodus chapter 12, the Passover feast was established, which was to be kept by the children of Israel every year as a reminder. As a reminder of their great deliverance from Egypt. They were fed in the wilderness. And so in Exodus chapter 16, instruction was given for a pot of manna to be kept in the Ark of the Covenant as a memorial, as a reminder that God takes care of his people. And you remember that. And then as they are entering into the promised land, I want us to read from Joshua chapter 4. Joshua chapter 4, this is the thought that came to my mind when I heard what was going to happen this morning, and that Harold was going to talk to us about some history. I thought about these memorial stones, that as they were walking across the Jordan River, that river dried up. And one man from each tribe was told to take a rock from the riverbed, put it up on his shoulders, and carry it over to the shore. And there they would be stacked up in a memorial. Now look at verses 5 through 7. And Joshua said to them, cross over before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan, and each one of you take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, that this may be a sign among you when your children ask in time to come, saying, what do these stones mean to you? I want to read that again. I want you to think about it. Moms and dads, in the future, you're going to walk by here with your children, and your children are going to notice this for the first time. And they're going to ask you, what do these stones mean to you? You be ready to tell them. You be ready to tell them. Then you shall answer that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord when it crossed over the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be a memorial to the children of Israel forever. Down in verse 21, then he spoke to the children of Israel, saying, when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what are these stones? Then you shall let your children know, saying, Israel crossed over this Jordan on dry land. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up before us until we had crossed over. That all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, and that you may fear the Lord your God forever. God took pains to make sure these memorials were established in the fabric of his people's lives, on their calendar throughout the year, scattered across the land, even in their homes. They had many memorials. They had many occasions to teach their children. But we know the history of Israel, and we know the problem. Despite all of these memorials, they didn't remember. In Judges chapter 2, and at verse 7, so the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. When all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord, nor the work which he had done for Israel. Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And thus starts that repetitive cycle through their history of faithfulness and apostasy and punishment, repentance, over and over again. How could it be that the generation after Joshua's didn't know the Lord? They were told to teach their children. They were told to erect these monuments. How could this have happened to them? How can we make sure that it doesn't happen today? That all of the work, all of the sacrifices that were made just a couple of generations ago, it wouldn't take much for this building to be left empty. And we need to honor those sacrifices that were made. I want to read to you an observation that was made by Brother Bob Waldron. He spoke in a lectureship a few years ago on this text from Judges chapter 2. And I want to read what he has written here. And I hope that you will give me your attention for just a couple of moments. Indulge me while I tell you a story that will illustrate what I think probably happened to the Israelites, and I'll let you decide if it's our failure too. My story is not biblical because it is not one that's actually recorded, but it is biblical in that all the background facts of the story are true. It's about an Israelite. The young man of my story was born in the wilderness itself, therefore he never knew the slavery of Egypt. Though he did not see the events of Egypt, he did know what happened to Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, and he knew about the death of Miriam and the death of Aaron. He was there for the journey Israel took through the great and terrible wilderness. By the last year of the wandering, our young man was around 23 years of age. He took part in the fighting that went on for the kingdom of Sihon and the kingdom of Og. When the fighting on the east side of the Jordan was over and Israel returned to camp at the plains of Moab, Moses preached to the people to prepare them for his departure and for their entrance into the land of Canaan. The speeches of Moses are recorded in the book of Deuteronomy. Our young man was deeply impressed by these speeches, and when Moses went away, never to come back, the young man was very sad because Moses had been a part of his life since he was born. Didn't Harold say he remembers when many of you were brought home from the hospital? Nevertheless, Israel was in the capable hands of Joshua, and led by him, they crossed the Jordan River into the land of Canaan. What a day that was. The priest walked a little over a half mile ahead, carrying the Ark of the Covenant wrapped in its dark blue covering. The Jordan was at flood stage. How would they cross its swollen waters with women and children, flocks and herds and wagons? When the priest's feet were dipped in the brink of the water, the flow of the water from upstream was cut off, and the water rapidly dropped until the river, till the dry riverbed was exposed, and the people crossed over on dry ground. Our young man was there, and he heard all the sounds. He saw the waters drop. He marveled as he and his people crossed over. What an awesome God he served. He would never forget that day. How thrilled he was at the power of the Lord. Joshua commanded that one man from each tribe pick up a stone, and when they reached Gilgal, Joshua commanded that the rocks be put in a stack and said, "This may be a sign among you that when your children ask in time coming, saying, 'What mean ye by these stones?' then ye shall say unto them, 'Because the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark,'" as we have read here. In Joshua, our young man with all Israel went on to conquer the land in the central campaign, the southern campaign, and the northern campaign. When the land was divided, our young man of our story, now around 29 or 30, received his portion in the hill country of Ephraim. He settled down, married, and began to raise a family. When his firstborn son was around 12, he decided to take him to visit relatives over in the territory of Reuben. The son was plenty old enough now to walk such a journey. So his father and he sent off from the hill country of Ephraim, walking the ridge path that took them by the ruins of Ai and Bethel. How well the father remembered the disastrous first effort to take Ai and all the trouble they had straightening out what Achan had done, and then the victorious battle in which Ai was taken. Plunging down the descent toward the Jordan Valley, they soon found themselves nearing the ruins of Jericho. The stones were still lying where they had fallen close to 20 years before. Never would the father forget the experience of seeing those strong walls collapsing all around the city. He and his son continued to walk past the city, traveling on to the Gilgal campsite. And as they walked, they came to a pile of rocks, the very stack of rocks that Joshua had commanded to be put there. It was the strangest feeling to have happened to him, exactly what Joshua had anticipated. When his son saw that monument of rocks, he asked, "Father, what is this stack of rocks for? What does it mean?" Before I tell you what the father said, I need to tell you what was going on in the father's mind. He and his son were in the very floor of the Jordan Valley, and there the sun sets unusually early because its rays are so quickly blocked by the very high ridge to the west. It would get dark very early, and the father wanted to make the Jordan crossing before the light was gone. There was only so much time for this trip, and only so many provisions he had for himself and his son. He could not afford delay. All of these things were on his mind. "Father, what is this stack of rocks for? What does it mean?" The father answered, "My son, that stack of rocks was put there to remind us that God stopped the water of this river so that we could cross on dry ground. Let us hurry on now, lest we be caught by the dark on this side of the Jordan." Did the father tell his son the facts about the monument and what it represented? Yes. Were the facts enough to cause faith? No. At this point, we enter into a sensitive area, because it is an area in which it's hard to keep the proper balance. One might possibly think that I am preparing to minimize the importance of the facts, and nothing could be further from the truth. One cannot tell the mighty works of God without facts, and there has been far too much teaching of Bible facts without the Bible at all. Though the father shared the facts, he did not share the way he felt about the facts. He did not show his feelings nor explain them. Maybe the father was not very good at telling his son the mighty works of God. Perhaps he was not very comfortable sharing his feelings about God. Would these problems justify his letting his son become an idolater? Is that what he wanted? This father shared his facts, but not his faith. He shared the facts, but not the fear and reverence for God these facts had engendered in him. And I like that. I remember when I heard Brother Waldron give that, and I'm glad it was recorded. I'm glad I could share it with you. The baton has been handed to us. It is our leg of the race. And we have children and we have grandchildren who want to know why we're here. Why are we here in this building? And why do we come back in the afternoon? And why are we here on Wednesday night? And why is this so important to you? And well, just because it is, isn't good enough. When was the last time that you went ahead and let the sun set and you took the time to explain to your son or your daughter why you serve God? Why he matters to you? Why he is worth sacrificing for? Just as a couple of generations ago, children were probably wondering why mom and dad, why are we going back to that building to clean up that building? What's that all about? Let's make sure we're taking the time, not just to give our children the facts, but to share our faith with our children and our grandchildren. As we mentioned in the book of Judges, there begins that cycle. A generation rises up that doesn't remember the Lord. In the book of Psalms, Psalm 78 is a historical psalm that talks about the fall of Israel, how they went away into captivity. And right in the middle of this psalm, there's a phrase that is found here in verse 42 that covers it all. They did not remember his power. Why did all that happen to them? They were told again and again, lest you forget. Be careful to teach your children. Still yet, they didn't remember, and so they suffered. In Nehemiah chapter 9 and at verse 17, after rebuilding the wall around the city, then he sets forth to rebuild the city spiritually. And in this chapter, there is a confession, a prayer that is offered unto God. And look at what we find in the midst of it. Verse 17, they refused to obey, and they were not mindful of your wonders that you did among them. You know how easy it would be for us to raise up a generation that's not mindful of God. Let's make sure we impress upon the hearts and the minds of our young people how important it is that we remember. That we remember the powerful works of God. That we remember especially the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. The price that was paid for the forgiveness of our sins. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, 24 and 25, this do in remembrance of me. What's that all about? Well, when we pass these emblems, that's when we remember the great price that was paid for my sins and for yours. Teaching opportunities. Let's continue to use them. Because the problem of forgetfulness was not unique to past generations of God's people. We have problems with it too. So we need to remember the powerful works of our God. We need to remember the death, burial, and resurrection of our Lord. But we also need to remember the efforts that were put forth, the battles that were fought, and the sacrifices that were made by those who were just a generation or two ahead of us. We need to remember, and we need to honor that by running our leg of the race as well and as faithful as we can today. Harold, I thank you so much for sharing these things with us. But I'm so thankful that we've all listened. And I know we're taking something away from this. Something that the Bible holds up to us and tells us to take. And that is a determination to keep on keeping on. To build on, to fight on, to stand, and to do what is right. And to always be ready to answer everyone, but especially our children and our grandchildren, when they say, "What does this mean to you? What does this mean to you?" Let's be ready to help them to develop their own faith. If you're here and you're not yet a Christian, not yet a child of God, you need to become one. That's part of the reason the church exists, this congregation exists here, is to spread the gospel and to give the opportunity for others to believe and to obey as we have. Could you imagine having to dig a baptistry in the basement of a building? We've got one right behind me here, and it's full of water and it's ready if you are. If you're ready to obey the gospel, if you need to repent and make things right in a public way, if you need the prayers of the congregation, and we're ready to help you, whatever your need is, let it be made known by coming forward as we stand and sing this song.